Chapter 2, A Touch of Evil.
Hello, and welcome to Chapter 2 of Cry Me a Riverdale. I'm your host, John Reisinger. Joining me is also your host,
Mikey Newman. I didn't know when you were
just raised his hand.
Well, we're on video. You can see my hand.
Yeah, but the podcast isn't a video podcast. And that's true, my host and you raised your
my
hand.
My host, Silence.
I'm letting you say your own name.
Yeah, Silence is starting this week. So this was the second episode, and I would say a lot happened in this episode.
Yeah, you know, going back and rewatching this, I have to agree with you on that. There was just a ton of stuff. Like, you think the first episode would be a ton of stuff, but second episode was just as much.
Yeah, and a lot of equally interesting revelations that we're going to get into in a moment, and a lot of Betty's mom actually becoming worse. She's one of those people that they're not obsessed with, you know, winning the Guinness Book of World Record for something. They're obsessed with breaking their own Guinness Book of World Records.
She's
trying to out evil herself.
I mean, you could tell, like, this show was obviously, like, not specifically written for people like us, and I mean like 30-year-old men.
Right. It looks like half the cast is 30-year-old, but whatever.
Yeah, but like, you know, you could tell, like, it's obviously being geared towards a much younger demographic.
Well, it's a high school show, and that's why high school shows are evergreen, unlike college shows, because high school shows, for whatever reason, applies to young children, applies to people in high school, applies to people in college and beyond. Like, it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's every other high school, you know, twist on a genre.
Yeah, but I watch this and I wonder if there's any kids who watch this and go, yeah, my mom is exactly like Betty's mom. Like, if there's actually moms that are out there like that. I didn't grow up with a mom like that at all. But, like, are there, like, especially, like, women? Are there, like, women? Like, I'm asking you, Mikey, are there women out there?
Why? I have no idea or opinion on this. My mom is also not like that. I would doubt that most people would not put up with a woman that is that conniving and that manipulative and that disturbing. I will say that there were some fun activities in the BM count. If you remember from last week, they started the Betty's mom count.
Betty's
and that
mom's
will go
count.
Up if she makes it through an entire scene acting like a human. Spoiler alert, it doesn't. But there is some surprises there, which we'll get to in a minute. But let's jump in.
Yeah, I should pull my notes back up. I put them down. There they are.
To A Touch of Evil. And we open with a Jughead voiceover giving us a viewpoint in the world, blah, 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 blah. And mostly about the murder of Jason Blossom, which has gained some notoriety since
Jason Dunn got shot
in the face.
Jason got headshot.
Right. And that puts a lot of pressure on Cheryl, I think, through this entire episode. But there are some good revelations there as well. They're building a really good mystery.
Yeah, they kind of started off with, like, all right, so Jason's body's been found, and now he's going to coroner, who the coroner is the curly-haired bad guy from Legion.
Yeah, but quickly from the beginning, when the voiceover is happening, we see a shot of Jason with his sister when he was alive at Pops, and they're sharing a milkshake with straws all romantic-like.
Yeah.
But I there was something else going on, because later in the episode, when Betty and Veronica are in the pop shop, Betty is drinking a white milkshake, vanilla, obviously, and Veronica is drinking a double chocolate. But the milkshake that Jason and Cheryl are drinking is strawberry. And they're sharing it Lady in the Tramp style.
Because Pops only serves milkshakes based on your hair color.
Yeah, and if you're – well, actually, it makes sense. Oh, except that orange milkshakes probably wouldn't be very good.
Now.
But I will say that they are sharing it Lady in the Tramp style, and if you are thinking that doesn't make sense, it means exactly what you think it does.
No, like, they're the Lannisters. They're the Lannisters. They're the Lannisters.
The Lannisters never shared food.
They just
shared uglies.
Well, it's all symbolism, Mikey.
Right.
So yeah, okay, yeah. So we kind of get a little bit of a glimpse of that. They're insinuating more and more that Cheryl and Jason are something more than just siblings. Yeah, we go to the coroner, and then we get some more fan service of a sweaty underwear Archie in bed.
Yeah, and I just wrote update. Archie is still ripped.
He's so ripped.
Yeah, I mean, like no high schooler in the history of all time has ever looked like that.
Yeah. Okay, so he distracted by Archie Ebbs. So yeah, he texts Betty. So we're kind of going back.
She blows him off, not once, but twice.
Yeah.
She blows him off. And then he goes for a run without a shirt on in the road.
Yeah, we go from sweaty underwear in bed to sweaty shirtless in the street.
And we know exactly where he's going.
He's going to Grundy's.
He's going to Grundy's.
Shirtless and sweaty.
Got to get Grundy's undies some more.
oh, man.
So, yeah, so he runs to his teacher's house without a shirt in the middle of the night, shows up. She's, of course, in, like, some silk negligee. Like, did none of you sleep in boxers or sweatpants? This is
like,
ridiculous.
Yeah, like, our pajama pants and just, like, a raggedy shirt.
Yeah. It's the company retreat shirt. So Archie is telling Grundy that he desperately wants to go to the cops. And obviously Mrs. Grundy doesn't want to do that. But I think a really key thing here is that she says to scare him. And I think this is the sort of subtext of, because again, I haven't finished the series yet, but the subtext of Grundy seems to be manipulating at any cost to save her own ass, because she tells Archie that if they get caught because he wants to tell the cops about this, they will both go to jail.
Yeah. And I was like, no, you won't.
Yeah. It's like, well, one of us will.
Yeah. What's a minor?
I think you might want to look at those particular bylaws. Just give them a quick glance.
Yeah. So yeah, that was like, that's manipulation take one from this episode.
Yeah, and she pours it on pretty thick.
Yeah, like, I mean, she's like, this episode could be, you know, subtitled Grundy self-preservation is what it is.
And that makes Archie's arc that much better, actually.
Yeah, because it very much manipulates Archie for quite a while.
To Archie and his dad having a heart-to-heart at the breakfast table.
Yeah, and it's that, and that's like, Archie has his theme right now, and his theme is lie constantly in order to continue to do what he wants to do.
And his dad does seem to realize that that's going on and is
letting it.
But he does instill the most important thing that Archie should know is that you have to do the right thing, even if it'll sort of mess you up in the process. Like, if there are consequences, you need to face them and do the right thing. And I was like, good on you, Luke Perry.
And
we cut to a much worse parenting scene.
Yeah. Where we go to Betty's room and Betty's mom acts all crazy. Calls Jason a sociopath.
She kept the BM counter at zero the first line she walked in there. I mean, she usually kind of works up to the evil reveal of the scene. She came in guns blazing with... What should we call her husband, Betty's dad? Because he's really just like this aloof gopher.
Well, yeah, for the beginning of the series, he's just like a little peon thug to Betty's mom, like has really no input whatsoever.
And you know there's an eventual reveal here where they can say that they showed you a character and they put a character in front of your face the whole time, and then later. He's got secrets.
Yeah.
Why else? Would
Yeah. And then that's everyone does.
Sure.
Yeah. And so the scene kind of ends with like Betty
being
agreeing with mom, swearing off Archie, swearing off Veronica.
Right. Smash cut to Betty ringing Archie's doorbell, which I thought was really cute.
Yeah. Like totally not swearing off Archie.
Well, she's like, I promise. Ding dong. Like it was like immediate. So.
And then she just spends basically the whole walk to school compartmentalizing her own feelings and wants if for the sake of keeping the peace with those around her.
I actually, not to get way too far ahead of ourselves, I actually added an additional category this week in addition to the star Rivadalian of the week. I actually
is unprecedented. We didn't talk about this.
I actually added the star Riverfalian of the week. And I thought it was going to be Betty, but I was wrong. Because Betty does not look good in this episode. Like,
no.
She emotionally tries to do what her mom does, only very bad. So
yeah.
She's actually like a worse version of her mom, which is hard to imagine, but is true.
Yeah, and then Archie obviously is extremely relieved that Betty, quote unquote, just wants to be friends and is okay with that.
Yeah, which is not true.
It's not healthy. It's not true. But Archie, just in his, I guess, like naivety, was just like, "Hey, that's cool. We could be friends. I'm glad this worked out." I'm a
also,
dumb high
I'm
school
boning
boy.
The teacher. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.
I don't. I take everyone's word for, you know, surface level meetings. I don't look into anything.
There's not a lot of subtext in Archie's world. I think.
It's just all that topsoil. That's all there is. There's nothing underneath it.
Archie is just topsoil. So
yeah.
We kind of cut to the locker room, and we get a nice Jughead Archie moment. Jughead is like a little obsessed with the morbid humor, and
I love the word he used. He said he uses sardonic humor to relate to the world, and I like in my head was like same.
Yeah, even though sardonic pretty much means it's unrelatable, but yes.
But I think that's actually pretty true with like Jughead, considering he's doing it with Archie, who's...
And it is relatable. We do love him for it, so it's fine. But we get our first real run-in with Reggie Mantle.
Yeah.
And I have started calling this the Archie air horn alert, because Reggie slams into Jughead like a real bully, and then calls him Wednesday Adams. And that wasn't the best... insult. The show is pulled out, but it wasn't the worst. I mean, it was a hell of an effort, Reg.
This show does have a lot of like interesting like name calling, you know, moments, like constantly.
Yes.
I don't remember calling people that many names in high school other than just like swear words if you were mad, but like they're like Wednesday Adams and I mean there's a bunch more that they constantly pull out. Like at one point Cheryl says to Archie, no, you ghoul.
Ghoul. I'm like, ghoul is such a good word all the time. I say that a lot. but quick background, Reggie is actually the same blowhard jackass in the comics, only he apparently gets beat up by Moose a lot. So one of his pet peeves is getting beat up. So his real introduction to our world is beating someone up, which I thought was okay. But what's interesting is the plot line from the comics was that Reggie was always trying to steal Moose's girlfriend, Midge.
Oh, was he? I thought he was always going after Veronica.
I think it might be both, but...
Well, we've got like 100 years of comics, so it might have happened at some point.
And the Midge-Moose thing does come up later, though.
Yeah, Moose is technically dating someone named Midge, which Kevin talks about.
And
we haven't met Midge.
This is the first time, and I don't know why I didn't realize it in the first episode, but Kevin Keller is the son of Sheriff Keller.
Yes, who looks like an older Chris Pine. He's the most well-coiffed sheriff I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, just pull up Chris Pine, pull up the sheriff, you'll see it. It's insane.
I think we're in like the school office or something because, I got a 19 sync.
No. They go, we follow.
Cause
Veronica
sent Betty's flowers to school, which is like, I mean, Veronica really starts out trying this friendship thing a little too hard.
She buys friendship cause that's the only way she knows how to interact, I think, with people that are upset.
But the thing is, Betty is so adept in these first two episodes at having the high ground and then losing it immediately based on her actions. Because
there's the dark Betty, and dark Betty continues to just keep putting more and more, being put in the corner so that, you know, the status quo can just continue, you know, everyone can just be fine.
Yeah, and Veronica is trying really hard to make up to Betty for the fact that she made out with Archie. But I want to quickly remind everyone that both Archie and Veronica were totally single, totally consenting, and it was totally fine.
Yeah.
And Betty forgives Veronica for nothing, and what sucks even more is it's a fake apology, or not apology, forgiveness. Like,
yeah, acceptance of apology. Yeah.
And oddly, Kevin is in the scene, and he's also upset from Betty's perspective.
Yeah, he's. I think he's just trying to back up his friend without really actually knowing anything.
Well, he needs some backup in a second because he steps into it later. But there's an announcement. Like, we cut to the announcement at the school office
with Sheriff Chris Pine.
With Sheriff Chris Pine, Cheryl. For some reason, because the announcement is about her murdered brother, which happened five days ago. And they're like, please come to the microphone with us. Like, no problem.
They just she's allowed to act crazy.
Yeah. And she just grabs the microphone and starts like threatening everyone in the school, swearing revenge, which she ends with hashtag Riverdale strong.
You know, gotta connect with those millennials with that hashtag reference.
It's such a good ironic hashtag. Please tweet us with the hashtag. So Jughead confronts Archie right after this in the hallway.
Yeah, he starts putting two and two together. Him and Archie were supposed to go on a road trip. He canceled at the last second, and then that was the day that the whole disappearing happened.
Because there's a lot of confronting going on, because then they immediately cut to two girls that I'm not really sure who they were confronting Cheryl.
They're like the Crab and Goyle of
You know what? We will go with Crab and Goyle. 10 That's points to are. Gryffindor.
Yeah, because then they become her cronies like later on in the series. So she's like, or she has these two cronies. I don't know. They're all generic.
Yeah, which is really weird because the thing they are accusing her of is literally murdering her brother.
Yeah. And then in this class, a few things happen. Kevin turns down Moose and tells him
Moose
to stick with girls.
Moose loves Kevin so much.
Yeah, I feel really bad for Moose. He's dealing with, you know, suppressed sexuality, and he's got this pretty gay boy he likes.
But the problem is that out and about Kevin tells Moose that he isn't gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a whack move. And he's like, hold my beer, because he's gonna make an even whacker move in a second. But I was like, dude, why are you
he's
policing?
Very judgy.
Yeah, so judgy. I think that does go to the sort of idea that there are actually pretty relatable real flaws about every character, which I like a lot.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That Kevin does have actual flaws.
You know, especially on a sitcom or a show that you would think would be the cheap version of this, they tend to treat gay characters more as a prop than as a person. And I'm actually happy to see that. I mean, because Kevin really steps in a second, but I like that he's flawed. So Archie, because Kevin pairs up with Moose, and then Archie pairs up, because they're in chemistry or something, he pairs up with Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
And she is acting like an actual human for a second. Because I think the shock of that her brother was incidentally murdered with a gun, which she obviously knows wasn't the plan or whatever was supposed to happen. So she's surprised, but she actually shows some vulnerability for a second. And then right when you're like, oh, Cheryl, she compares the frog dissection to her brother's autopsy, which is happening literally at that moment.
And she cuts a frog.
And then she stabs a frog.
She, she splits that guy down and, like, shocks everybody. And they all go, like, ooh, she's crazy. And then from there, we go to the coroner's office.
Which was nuts. Because I thought it was a reporter at first. It's Betty's mom bribing the coroner.
Yeah.
And what I think is most important about that scene is there were ligature marks on his wrists.
Which implies
that he was tied and somebody shot him in the face. And it's like, that's a little dark show.
But then they also insinuate that he was preserved. like post-mortem, because they say he's got something cryo-necrotic preservation or something like that, and that means that he was like killed and then thrown into like a freezer or something for at least some time.
It was actually Walt Disney's idea.
Is that still a thing? Are we still like waiting for Walt Disney to come out of his
probably not.
His cryo chamber?
So speaking of Kevin stepping in it, this is the scene, and I wrote a lot of it down actually, and some facts about it. Kevin, when thrusting into the front, because they're talking about Moose and having a relationship with Moose, and he's obviously not all about it, but Kevin says, and I quote, "I mean, I am devastatingly handsome in that classic pre-accident Montgomery Clift kind of way, and sexuality is fluid, but can someone named Moose be that fluid?" Which is a dense line. They have a weird obsession with old Hollywood, and I love it. But pump the brakes for a second, and just some facts. Okay. Montgomery Clift was an actor in early Hollywood likened to James Dean and Marlon Brando because of his penchant for method acting. And in 1956, Clift fell asleep at the wheel of his car, leaving a party at Elizabeth Taylor's, no doubt. He survived, but it was recovery for 2 months, and he got a lot of plastic surgery to try to put his face back together, and eventually returned to film with a completely different look, hence pre-accident Montgomery Clift. And
how are we supposed to know that reference?
I did some research on that. But what is amazing is that Montgomery Clift, pre-accident, does look exactly like Kevin Keller. It is. If they make a movie about Montgomery Clift's life, they have their dude.
Just going to Google this real quick.
You can continue. But what also sucks about this entire exchange is Kevin, stop determining other people's sexualities for them, please.
Yeah.
Like, that sucks.
Well, he definitely like kind of takes on that role of like a stereotypical gay man who like, you know, he might say that gender is fluid, but then like judges that he's not fluid, that he's actually just straight.
How can someone say that, you know, sexuality is fluid and then say, but not this guy? That does make you the asshole, dog. But we learn about Midge and Moose in this scene. This is actually our introduction to Midge as a concept. But completely out of left field, Kevin outs Moose. Not just to Betty and Veronica, which he'd already clearly already done, but also to Archie. And now he's outing people.
Oh. Now, was that seriously what happened?
Yes. That's why when he said the thing about the closet, Archie looked up like, what?
I thought that was a reference to that the Archie and Veronica got in the closet, and that's
I think it has two meanings.
Things can't have two meanings, Mikey.
But that's not a thing.
The kid.
Yeah, there's again only topsoil.
Topsoil.
So Archie just sort of goes into a song on his guitar that he just has at school.
Yeah.
And we learn, I think, pretty subtly that Betty has a bit of PTSD about some stuff because
he triggers her hard.
Yeah, she gets some sympathy for a second, but then blows up and sort of loses our trust a little bit. But she's just crying and being like, "I thought we could be friends, but we can't," and then runs off, and he runs after her.
She realizes like, hey, I'm a human. I have feelings that I can't ignore, and they're gonna affect me. But which I guess is something as a high schooler you figure out.
That's true, I guess. But it's a little hard to watch. But again, flaws are good. So, when Archie's chasing after Betty, the principal pulls him aside.
Mm-hmm.
And what was weird. Is that Archie stopped in front of the principal's office and made eye contact with him for like a brief second earlier in the episode. And the principal's like, "Do you want to tell me something about Jason's murder? I saw that look you gave me." And you're like, "What?" Like,
he's kind of jumping to conclusions over there.
Let me get my mat. it was odd.
Was that a jumping to conclusions, Matt reference from Office Space?
Yes. But now that we've explained it, it doesn't count.
I'm reeling at that kind of a reference.
But like the principal scares Archie so much because the principal's right. That's exactly what Archie wanted to tell him. But Archie, of course, like a sad puppy idiot, runs back to Grundy.
And who apparently I've decided practices cello all day long.
And
because earlier in the episode when they had the announcement, she was also practicing her cello time. And then when he runs to her right now, she's practicing cello again.
Yeah, because it gives her something to do. it's the folding clothes scene from Attack of the Clones. They're just like, but Archie vaguely threatens her because he says, essentially what amounts to, if you don't say you love me, I will tell on you. And it's like,
he does basically. It's just a little manipulation on his part,
right,
too, I guess.
And the thing is, I have no idea where she's at because she reciprocates immediately that she wishes they were a thing and she touches his hand. And it actually does look genuine, but it's also like tough to. It feels like
it looks
like
genuine
nine
for 1 second and then immediately goes to like villain eyes of. And like she's not just touching his hand, she was like playing with it with her fingers. Yeah. So she went to like immediately the playful, and so she immediately went into shit mode. I gotta stop this kid from going.
I don't know necessarily where this plot line is going. Again, I haven't seen the whole season, but it's a little odd to play this star-crossed lovers thing so hard. Cause I'm like, what are we supposed to feel about this? Cause I'm pretty sure everyone's like, nah, this is a bad idea though. Huh? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think unless you're a total dunce, you see this and go, well, this has an expiration date at some point. Like this isn't the end game kind of thing. It's going to end either quietly or it's going to end horribly, but it's going to end either way.
That expiration date actually walked up in the form of Jughead because Jughead sees him.
He sees them doing their little.
He sees Archie and Grundy getting real close in there, and he's like, "Yeah, but what?"
And then we go to cheerleading / stripper practice.
I just wrote Cheryl is in hell mode in all caps.
She gives like a patent speech.
That's exactly the note I wrote. I wrote she is giving because that had to be what they were doing. It just
like
lacked
with,
the flag.
Like
it had the arms behind the back,
pacing and everything.
Yeah. So, but it's cheerleading, so I guess. But it doesn't really matter because somehow Betty is still mad about the closet.
Yeah.
Which was nothing. It's like you're 17, people kiss. Get over it. Like,
and she's not mad at Archie. She's mad at Veronica. Yeah. She's sad about Archie, but she doesn't have any like anger for them. But she's totally giving Veronica like anger stuff.
And Veronica says the most astute thing a high schooler probably could ever say in this situation. Because
I'm gonna need you to give me the best read of this because this is your moment to give this read
Okay. Most of the time, the people we like don't like us back.
And it hurts.
I was like, amen, girl.
it hurts because it's true.
It is true. Yeah. But it's like, Betty, you can't be. It's not going to happen if I'm not with Archie. Because really, Veronica seems to more be pally-pally with Archie this episode. But
And also, it's very clear that her main priority is her friendship with Betty. And not trying to find a boy.
Veronica continues to go into every scene and do the right thing.
She also has a great line where she says, "It's not my fault he doesn't like you."
Yeah. Which is
so
true.
She's dropping truth bombs, you know, right and left.
Truth bomb.
You're so thug, Mikey.
I am super thug. Real street. Hashtag real street. So Archie shows up at the diner because Veronica, who we learned that her mom calls her Ronnie as a nickname, which I think is adorable.
Her mom's name is Hermione too.
Yeah, that's weird. but Archie walks Veronica home from the diner because he's picking up some burgers, and they have a real just sweet heart to heart. And they both seem genuinely worried about Betty, and not for any relationship that they do or not have. They're just like, our friend is in trouble, and she's starting to spiral.
Yeah.
which then we cut to Betty and Cheryl.
Yeah, they're hanging out in Betty's room.
The makeup scene.
Doing makeup and makeovers and the girly stuff that, you know, we've never gotten to experience as boys.
I don't want to say that I never have, but I don't necessarily want to tell any stories about it. Anyway, we learn a bit about Polly in this scene because Cheryl has no tact whatsoever.
No. And starts,
but she gets pretty bad. But we realize that Polly is actually at a home for people with a mental disorder, and she does not yet know that her boyfriend has been literally murdered. So
yeah.
That seems like a powder keg just getting primed, you know, as a charge on the bridge.
Cheryl pulls out another great name-calling moment and tells Betty at one point, because Betty was asking, like, why she's asking all these questions, and Cheryl's like, because you dumb cow.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's like 2 inches from her face, too, while she says it.
Yeah, but the problem is that, again, in a situation where Cheryl has totally overplayed her hand and given Betty all the high ground in the world, Betty can transition to losing it immediately.
Dark Betty comes out.
And threatens to murder Cheryl, whose brother was just murdered.
Yeah, so I get out think, before I kill you.
Yeah, I feel like the police maybe would have something to say about that.
Yeah, it's like, don't say bomb in an airport and don't say I will kill you during a murder investigation.
And I just wrote, high ground, no longer.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone.
Totally gone. So Archie comes home with the burgers because it seems like he's been walking for like an hour with these burgers. They're probably just ice cubes by now. But Jughead is like waiting on the stoop.
Yeah.
And Jughead is the only one that gets away with being creepy on purpose because you're like, all right.
It's Jughead.
Yeah.
Gets the whole story from Archie.
About the teacher, about the gunshot. I mean, he tells him everything. He tells his best friend everything, which is great. But Jughead then starts making a lot of sense, and he's like, you idiots, this is really bad.
Yeah.
You need to tell someone.
And also can immediately recognize that Grundy was manipulating him.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that Archie's dad comes out not too long after that, and we realize that what Jughead is saying mirrors almost exactly with what his dad was saying. So Archie is pretty made up at this point that he's going to tell that he heard a gunshot, which is pretty obvious. I mean, you really got to come forward with information in a murder. And I don't know why Archie couldn't just say he was camping alone at the lake.
I feel like there's a few like alibis that could involve you. I needed some alone time. That's why I was out there.
I think people cheat on their spouses a lot. And I think that there are a few other options to pulling this off, guys.
And also this conversation ends in another threat as well. Archie threatens Jughead, not with anything, but he like threatens to not do anything about this.
I wrote Archie and Jughead are now mortal enemies and I need to find the popcorn. So I paused it and then I went and I made popcorn. And I poured myself. Pro tip, listeners, real quick, Riesling and kettle corn. I don't know why. It is the most amazing thing.
That's fantastic.
That's real because it's a sweet wine and a savory popcorn.
Yeah. This has been Mikey's Snack Corner, you know, a reoccurring bit that we have in Riverdale.
Kettle corn with Mikey, my news. So Betty's mom burst in into Betty's room.
With sage.
Yeah, like lighting incense? What are we doing?
She's trying to like dispel like evil spirits with stupid sage and like swinging it around Betty's room.
But we learn in this scene that when Betty asks, hey, does my sister know that her boyfriend was murdered? That seems like an important thing. And we know exactly immediately that even though her mom says, oh, of course, we're like, oh my God, you didn't tell her.
Horrible. And then she also insinuates that Polly is drugged out or something, like doesn't know the time of day.
And for all of our counts, I want to point out that the BM count is actually not still at zero. It is now at -1. I actually subtracted a point because this was so ruthless.
Yeah.
You and lied to your daughter about the person she loved not being alive anymore and was murdered.
Yeah. And then when Betty like continues to ask, like mom goes into full deflection mode and immediately turns it around.
Shields
as you should as a parent.
Yeah.
Shields up.
100%.
She like, you know, takes a page from the Good Parent book and like makes it about Betty, you know, the moment that they were having, not about what Betty was asking, but like about Betty being bad or making bad mistakes or something.
But Betty does finally reach out because Betty now has no one in her corner.
No.
Because she basically told Veronica and Archie to go blow a goat. And now Betty has to reach out to Veronica because she's like, oh, I probably need a friend.
Yeah.
And Kevin is just a walking can of gasoline.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that totally makes sense because the next scene she goes and she mends things with Veronica at the lockers.
Yeah, and that one's pretty quick because we move into Reggie.
Where are they in this scene?
What?
Are they in like some sort of student lounge? I didn't have like just a room with like giant leather plush chairs and stuff.
It looks like the teacher's lounge, but apparently students can hang out. It's like the Max, but in the school, I guess. But Reggie is just bloviating all these just Looney Spoons theories about who killed Jason.
Yeah.
And it's super bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's acting like a royal ass.
Yeah, well, but when Archie is like, yo, stuff it. Reggie starts a fight immediately, and it's not like a regular high school fight. Like Reggie breaks the glass on the snack machine with Archie's head.
Yeah.
And
also in that scene, just to keep going with this name calling thing, he calls Jughead Donnie Darko.
Yes, he does. And I was like, that was worse than the first one, but you're still not at the bottom. But Reggie, bro, we gotta work on your game a little bit.
Is this show set in like the early aughties or something? Because they haven't made any actual like modern references to anything in the past 10 years.
Well, it is designed. There's a lot of design elements because the clothes are from the '50s. The cars are mostly from the '60s and seventies.
But all their technology and social media references are modern.
Yes, and it's mixing decades to create a feeling of timelessness. I think Riverdale will actually hold up in like 10 years. In ways that like 90210 don't. Because you watch 90210 now, you're like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. That's actually good. You should write.
So Reggie literally knocks Archie out with a punch.
Yeah, and clocks him hard.
And I'm pretty sure you get expelled for that. But
when you wrestle a student against a vending machine, break the glass, and then take him to the floor and knock him hard.
On shit that you started because of a dead student.
At the very least, you should not be on the football team anymore. But he says,
I mean, Red's not that good. I mean, you hit the best player on the team. So,
yeah.
Because, of course, Archie's really good. So we get an Archie Luke Perry heart to heart because Archie's icing down his face because he's got a big old shiner, but the hottest black eye you've ever seen. Because most black eyes it's like swollen and dark.
Yeah.
But Archie's is like perfectly coiffed with its bruising.
It's just coloration. There's no swelling.
It's
beautiful. It's a good black eye.
But we get a further reinforcement of you need to do the right thing, even if I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Archie gives like the most non-specific explanation of what he's going through with Grundy without giving any explanation about it. And his dad, not asking any more specifics, just is like, yeah, you need to do the right thing. Obviously, don't be an idiot.
Right. So this is when Archie decides he's definitely going to come forward for this. I think you were actually legally compelled to come forward. I think Grundy telling Archie he shouldn't is actually a much more serious crime than the crime they already committed.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I'm just thinking about it now. I'm like, that's way worse because that's a murder investigation and you have info about the exact time.
An exact time, but there's information.
As far as we know, Archie only heard the one gunshot, and Jason was killed by a gunshot. So,
yeah.
But again, we don't know how this resolves. So, If you do know, please don't spoil it for everybody else. Archie decides based on this to come forward and Jughead, who he sees at the, cause they're at a night pep rally, I guess. That's the thing in Riverdale. Cause they all show up at the football stadium, but then they don't play any football. But they're all in their pads and everything.
Yeah. I wasn't that kind of kid that went to pep rallies.
Well, they were usually like early with like at the beginning of the day. Like that's where I remember them. But so Jughead's pretty cool with Archie now and they joke around and they're best friends again. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, they have a nice little moment, and Jughead makes some references about, you know, not making it too emotional. It's his way of covering up the fact that he wants to be emotional and that kind of thing.
And just to give the show another home run, it immediately cuts to Robin Givens, who is Josie's mom.
Yeah.
And anything that Robin Givens is in is automatically good.
Wait, what else has she been in?
Originally head of the class, a couple Tyler Perry movies. You just look her up on Wikipedia. There's a whole list. You can find them.
Okay.
But we transition to Josie and the Pussycats doing the raddest version of Sugar Sugar you will ever hear.
Yeah.
But it sounds nothing like a three-person band.
No. All the music is overproduced. It doesn't matter if it's Archie making his garage, you know, music. It sounds like he's produced by some sort of actual, like, studio.
What I did not know is that Sugar Sugar was a song originally by the Archies from the fictional show.
Shut up.
Yeah. It actually, Sugar Sugar is a song by the Archies. You can type it in Google right now. And, I didn't know that either, but yeah, it actually is from Archie.
Yeah, and in Riverdale, no one dies of electrocution in a rainstorm. Yeah, even if
I feel like the parents that are there, including literally her mom, is like, "Hang on, though." Although her mom just used a microphone in the rain too.
Yeah,
I'm like, did you guys? None of you read about Gavin Rossdale that one time? He got shocked super bad in the rain because he's playing Glycerine. He wouldn't shut up.
I couldn't ignore that. This is twice now I've watched this episode, and both times I'm like, this looks like a danger or some
in
sort of.
In the show's defense, it looks rad as hell.
Oh, it does. I mean,
like, Josie the Pussycats look amazing in the rain. So, yeah. Let's call it even.
Okay.
So, Cheryl has like a moment when she sees Archie. And you realize actually how close Archie and her brother Jason actually looked.
Yeah, they kind of peppered this in also like in an earlier scene where they're having like the whole announcement over the speakers and Archie is looking into a cabinet with trophies.
Yeah.
And they're doing this whole like camera thing where Archie's face is ghosting over in the glass reflection over Jason's. And they're just like peppering in this whole like Jason Archie are kind of like the same person. They look the same and they're both football players. And literally Archie is now wearing his jersey.
And have you heard the good news about Jesus Christ? Excuse me, can I have a moment of your time?
I got some literature for you.
A pamphlet is not literature.
Are we going into semantics about what literature is?
So Cheryl runs off because she actually, for the first time, Cheryl really realizes that her brother's dead and this isn't a thing that she probably should be manipulating. Because she does have a pretty real breakdown, and it's Veronica, again, that is doing the right thing, and she tracks her down.
They're also magically dry in the locker room.
Yeah.
Sorry, continuity things that I noticed. Yeah, they are perfectly dried, and their hair looks great in the locker room.
Everybody's hair looks great all the time, period.
It's like everyone lives in a James Bond world where your hair is constantly ready for the moment.
Riverdale is the land of perpetual Vidal Sassoon commercial.
And perfect jawline structure. Everyone has great jaws.
Somebody chiseled these baby boos out of the beautifulest marble. So Cheryl basically admits in this scene, not that it wasn't easy to figure out, but that she was planning to fake Jason's death with Jason.
Yeah,
so
her he was supposed he to come went, back.
And she's like, he was supposed to come back. And it's like, So that's not great. And then we go to Pops.
Yeah.
And this is actually the first time in the entire show that Jughead, Archie, Betty, and Veronica all sit down together, our main characters from the comic, And it's a really nice moment. They're all happy. Jughead is being needlessly morbid for no reason, just like old Juggo. It's great.
Well, they do this total moment where Betty and Veronica are there, and they have their hair color coordinated milkshakes. Yeah. And they have this line where they vow no man's going to come between them. And then Archie enters immediately afterwards with Jughead.
I love that the symbolism of the milkshakes in their clothing is just as subtle as like John Locke on Lost. When he'd like hold up the stones and be like, there's the black evil side and the white good side. And it's like, guys, come on. But it's a little on the nose.
Also, Jughead Jones the Third. Jughead is a family name that has been used multiple times.
He has a really nice coat of arms, the Jughead Joneses.
It's made of cheeseburgers.
Made of cheeseburgers. That's good. And right after we leave this like very happy scene.
Very Americana, Norman Rockwell, kids at
it's like neon Rockwell because the way the show is not classic in the way that Norman Rockwell is I mean, because everything is so saturated and there's neon lights around the windows.
Also, Pops refuses to turn overhead lights on in his diner.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much the entire show, though.
Yeah. Also, I noticed that we're just going to talk about this. The school is in a constant state of hazing and smoke. If you watch the show, it's like, it makes everyone look fantastic as well.
I believe the AV film club is just running around to women, just smoke machining everywhere.
Just lightly hazing everything so everyone looks good.
And for all my PAX wrestling fans out there, turn on the fog machine.
Don't do that.
Do not turn on the fog machine. So Cheryl gets arrested in the next scene.
Yeah, so
and
Archie,
we don't really know why.
Yeah, he goes to the principal, can't go to the principal because they walk out and head over to the class, and Cheryl knows she's getting arrested. References that are like the voiceover starts talking about the autopsy, that something has been discovered from the autopsy.
Yeah, which is like the third time they brought it up, so there's something important about the autopsy coming.
Yeah, and Cheryl says exactly that, I'm guilty. She doesn't say she's guilty of, but she says I'm guilty.
Which is probably drugs or something else or whatever, but...
and then they also let us know that Jason lived for a week.
Yeah, that is the final reveal of the episode, is that after Jason and Cheryl faked his drowning, he was somewhere for 7 days, was definitely tied up for part of that, and was... just executed point blank.
So like the timeline at this point is he drowns. Well, he fake drowns. And then at some point he gets captured, tied up, eventually executed, preserved, and then later dropped off into the river. So
the
there's
roast
like, that's
beef
the timeline.
Factory. I don't think that's a factory. So yeah, that's the big sort of bow on everything. And most people watching the show, I mean, again, immediately you're just like, Netflix episode 3.
Yeah.
And this is actually a really interesting way to watch it, how we're doing it right now, because we actually have to force ourselves to wait a week.
This is definitely a bingey kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So who is your star Riverdalian of the week?
Who is my star Riverdalian? Like, I want to say Jughead, even though you said Jughead last week, mostly because this was the episode that made me, everyone talks about immediately connecting with Jughead, and it was Jughead's, like, to quote him, his sardonic humor immediately, you know, made me fall in love with him. But now that we've talked about the episode, I actually want to say Kevin is my Riverdale of the week because he's a multifaceted character that
we're about to be very different sides of this railroad track. I invented a category just for Kevin.
Yeah. But so, he, you know, like that they obviously introduce him as this very stereotypical, you know, Will and Grace gay character, you know, who's going to say catty comments and be full of vinegar. But I love that he, you know, was like doing human things and you know, judging someone in a mean way.
Yeah. My star Riverdalian of the week is Veronica. She is trying a little too hard when the episode starts, but she is the one consistently talking people down the entire episode.
Yeah.
And generally, she's just being a good-ass human being. Like, it doesn't matter if it's Cheryl or Archie or Betty or Kevin. Like, every single person gets affected by her in this episode in some way, and it's generally a way that makes her life better. So I'm giving it to Veronica.
You can do that.
But as I said, I also invented the Star River Falian of the week, which is going to Kevin Keller.
Oh, not my boy.
Don't out people, dude.
Don't do that.
That's not up to you. You can't. And there were a lot of bad stuff from a lot of people this week, but that one felt like the most damaging for no reason. And he was oblivious to the fact that it wasn't a wrong.
Yeah. He's also just generally don't out him and don't, like, you know, decide what their sexuality is.
Yeah. I mean, he plays like sexuality Yahtzee with himself. He's like, put it in chance. But I got four to say, put it in chance.